Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 1025, the Game Fireball Hot Take Friday. We've got Chris Rock over here, Caroline Fenton, just cracking jokes left and right. Hello, Caroline.
Hello, how we doing?
Oh, just fantastic. Like, if you're looking at the stream right now, our stream on YouTube, Twitch, and Twitter, presented by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. If you're watching the stream right now and it looks like I'm crying, it's because Caroline has been saying a bunch of just ridiculous.
I almost wish we went live like 5 minutes before, just for a quick little comedy hour.
And I'll just say this, because I'm not going to tell any inside jokes, and I'm not going to tell you what we're talking about. It all started with us talking about Joe Rennie. I'm just going to leave it at that. Ian's here. Hello, Ian.
Hello, hello.
When you got on, when you put your headset on, what did you hear from us?
Extreme laughter.
Okay.
That is all. I missed the first part. So yeah, I was busy talking in the hallway, and so I hopped on last second, and boom, we were laughing.
Oh, you missed some zingers over here from Caroline Fenton. So I want to start with this, and I don't know how everybody else is feeling about the Seahawks game on Sunday for the Titans. And you say it like this: like, I love Chase on the midday show. I love Chase. I've known Chase now for 8-9 years. Chase has one of the just most golden and caring hearts I have ever met. Fair?
Fair.
Okay.
He's a great guy.
Every now and then, I kind of feel like Chase drinks too much Kool-Aid. Like, whether it's Predators Kool-Aid, Titans Kool-Aid, Vols Kool-Aid, Vandy Kool-Aid, and I think it's because Chase is such a great guy that he gives everybody the benefit of the doubt. Like, sometimes maybe I don't give enough people the benefit of the doubt. But I just think sometimes, Chase, it's like, you know, well, the coach said this, and I think that makes sense, so I'm going to... It's like, Chase, no, the coach is lying. And I don't have a specific instance of that. I'm just saying, I feel like I feel myself saying that when I'm driving around a lot. So I'm listening to Darren Donick and Chase today, presented by
Creation CBD.
And I'm driving around on this Fireball Hot Take Friday, and they're talking about the Seattle game today. And Chase is like, I think the Titans are going to win on Sunday. And I'm like, damn it, I think the Titans are going to win on Sunday. But
you guys
now,
took my take.
So, on this Fireball Hot Take Friday, I mean, all I've got to go off of is when the things look the worst in the Mike Vrabel era, like when it looks like it can't get any worse, the Titans win. When it looks like it can't get any better and they are cruising their way to the Super Bowl, they lose to some bum team. Case in point, 2018. They start the year losing to the Dolphins, which is bad. And then nobody expects them to beat the Texans in week two. And nobody expects them to beat the Eagles, who had just come off of winning the Super Bowl. Nobody expected them to beat Jacksonville. You go through those three games. They're 0-1. Mariota's hurt. Taylor Lewan out with a concussion. Jack Conklin out with a knee. Dennis Kelly out with an illness. They've got two backup tackles in there. They've got no starting quarterback. And they're playing the Houston Texans with J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus. And this was before Bill O'Brien ruined the team. And so you're thinking, no shot to win that game. They win. The next week, they go to Jacksonville. Jacksonville coming off their AFC Championship game appearance. Everybody forgets about that, but Jacksonville did, in fact, in 2017, go to the AFC Championship game. They are coming off of their appearance. They smoke the Patriots on national TV, and nobody thinks the Titans are going to beat Jacksonville that week. Blaine Gabbert gets knocked out on the first series. Mariota, who can't throw, has to come into the game, and they end up winning something like 10-6. And it was like a miracle that they won that Jacksonville game. Then they get the defending champion Eagles at Nissan Stadium, and they beat them in overtime. And now they're 3-1. And now everybody thinks Vrabel's the greatest coach of all time and that the Titans are on their way to the Super Bowl. And then they go to crummy Buffalo. And this was when Buffalo was still bad. And they go to crummy Buffalo, and Nick Williams drops a ball in the end zone, and the Titans lose. A game they have no business losing. They lose. They get sacked 9 times by the Ravens the next week. They go to London to lose to the Chargers. And now everybody thinks the sky's falling and the team's bad. And then they go and beat a good Cowboy team and a Patriot team back to back. And it's like, what? 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 So that's the thing that I've learned about the Mike Vrabel Tennessee Titans, when things are bad and you don't think they can get worse, and you look at the team they're about to play and you think, oh my goodness gracious, how are they going to win this game? Somehow, some way, they find a way to win that game. And so I am banking on 3 years of Vrabel, 3 years of beating the Kansas City Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes at home at Nissan Stadium, 3 years of almost winning out at the end of the 2018 season to make the playoffs, 3 years of starting off 2-4 and ending up in the AFC title game. I am banking this year on that and this game this week. The Titans last week could not block Arizona. They could not pass against Arizona. They could not catch against Arizona. They didn't miss a lot of tackles, which was kind of amazing, but they didn't get in any position to tackle. They couldn't cover against Arizona. Excuse me. They couldn't get off the field on third down against Arizona. They didn't punt the ball particularly well against Arizona, and they couldn't kick field goals against Arizona. They couldn't do anything. As I said on Monday, that team would have lost to the Jets. And I stand by it. They would have lost to the Jets. The Seattle Seahawks are better than Arizona. This game is on the road in Seattle, where Seattle very rarely ever loses, where they have arguably the best crowd in the NFL, where the Titans, for the first time in a year, are going to have to use a silent count because last year there were no fans, so it was pretty easy to not have to use a silent count. So an offense that has barely practiced together now has to go on the road, longest flight in the league to the Pacific Northwest, to take on the Seattle Seahawks with a great quarterback using a silent count that they haven't used in a year with an offense that has barely practiced together. And yet somehow, this is life, A, in the NFL, and B, Mike Vrabel. There is something about Vrabel and the Titans where they win this kind of game. Now, that doesn't mean that we still shouldn't be upset by the way they played on Sunday. That doesn't mean that the Titans are for sure going to win. It doesn't mean anything. But I just feel in my heart like the Titans are going to win this game. And when everybody was dogging the Titans on Sunday after they lost, and I was dogging them and they deserved to be dogged, but when everybody was dogging the Titans, there was this feeling I had that was, watch them go to Seattle on Sunday and win. And at that point, I was thinking, you know, I'm not going to say that they're winning, that they're going to go to Seattle and win, but now I kind of feel like they're going to go to Seattle and win. Chad Withrow, Outkick 360, going to be on our show later today. You got A.J. Brown throwing a fit at those guys. I mean, I'm looking at this and thinking in my head, I'm like, every piece of the paper would tell you there's no way the Titans are going to go to Seattle and win. No way. And yet, I just kind of feel like when this team gets super motivated, when you put them in a corner and you say they can't do something, some way, somehow, the history of Mike Vrabel, the 3 years he's been the coach, would tell us otherwise. Remember the one game? Ian, do you remember the one game last year that the Titans had absolutely zero business competing in?
Not off the top of my head. I apologize.
They played a Tuesday night, and I wasn't expecting you to. They played a Tuesday night against Buffalo.
The COVID game.
The COVID game, where the Titans spent a week away from each other. We talk about how big practice is and the fact that they didn't practice and what it looks like with them not practicing. They spent a week away from each other as, you know, the tree shook out on all the COVID positives. And so the Steeler game gets moved. They have a bye week. They're away from each other. They got two walkthroughs in before they played the Buffalo Bills, and they crushed them 42-16. Nobody thought the Titans were going to win that game. Nobody. Nobody gave them a chance. How could a team on paper that's not as good as Buffalo to begin with, how can that team take an entire week off of practicing, then play Buffalo and smoke them on national TV? And somehow they did. And that is just what the Mike Vrabel effect. It will anger you to your core when they do something dumb, like hand it off to Luke Stocker on 4th-and-1 against the Texans. Or when they lose a game at home or are competing in a game at home that they have no business competing in, that they should be winning by 30 points and they're not, that will drive you nuts. When the Titans win three in a row and you're feeling good about them and they drop a clunker to a bad Buffalo Bill team in 2018, you're going to be upset. But the Vrabel effect, I think, is real. We've got 3 years' worth of data that says when the Titans are playing a game that they have no business winning, they find a way to win. So I am banking on that this week against Seattle. I don't know how, if you're down on Todd Downing, that he's going to learn how to call plays in 1 week. I don't know how Taylor Lewan could just get his rear end spanked on Sunday and go out there this week and have the best game he's had. He hasn't played in a year. Derrick Henry every year is a slow starter. Ryan Tannehill, when asked to do more, sometimes does less. A.J. Brown and Julio Jones are coming off of disappointing starts. The defense is a complete and total question mark. And by the way, the first-round pick at corner, Caleb Farley, who doesn't even get out on the field anyways, is hurt and not going to play this week. Shocker. And we still have no idea if Randy Bullock, the kicker, can kick. And yet, the power of Vrabel, I think they're going to win this week. I know it's crazy, and there's nothing in my heart. Like, there's nothing I can say. There's no way I can diagram this to sit there and say, you know what, here's why I think the Titans are going to win. And it be some argument that you can't just quash. I mean, think about everything that Kyler Murray did to the Titans last week. Or that the Titans allowed Kyler Murray to do to them. You do know Russell Wilson's better than him. You do know their two receivers are better than Arizona's one. That's, yeah, it's kind of tough, kind of depressing, kind of. And yeah, I think they're going to win. 615-737-1025, Fireball Hot Take Friday. Your thoughts on Sunday's game. You think they're going to win, apparently, Caroline.
It's tough because if you take yourself out of Nashville and the team that we've been covering, let's just say it's any other game happening, just another game in the NFL, you would look at all of the factors working against the Titans. Your poor week one performance, like you mentioned, one of the longest trips in the NFL to Seattle in an incredibly loud stadium against a very robust Seattle offense with a defense that, you know, competing against a Titans defense that isn't great. All of the factors are working against the Titans. And if you're someone who's just watching this game kind of as a third party, you would never expect the Titans to win this game. It would feel like easy money betting on the Seahawks. But like you said, this Titans team has a history of doing exactly what you don't think they will do. I mean, Mike Vrabel is 7-0 after a double-digit loss. His ability to get his team going after a loss there, this team's ability, well, maybe not, you know, this exact team because we haven't seen it yet, but Mike Vrabel's ability, to his point, flip the page to the next week and fix the issues that you saw the week before is almost unmatched. So it feels silly for me to say, yeah, I think the Titans have a very, very good shot at winning this weekend, but history tells us they absolutely do.
Ian, what do you think?
I think they will play better. I don't think they're going to win though. I just think the Seattle is just going to be too tough at Seattle. I do think they're going to play a lot better, and I think they will keep it closer probably than some people expect. But I can't pick them to win.
I hear you. I mean, there
is so fair.
If I didn't cover the Titans. Like, if I didn't cover the Titans, I would think there's no chance for this team to win. Because I wouldn't know. Like, I wouldn't have the experience of watching Nick Williams drop the ball in Buffalo and think to myself, how in the world can you beat the world champion Eagles but not beat the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo in 2018? So, like, I've seen that. If I didn't see it, I wouldn't believe it. There is nothing that you saw in Sunday's game that could make you think this team could beat the Seahawks.
Correct.
Nothing. And yet, this is just what they do. I didn't even know the stat you just told me.
Mm-hmm.
Vrabel 7-0 after double-digit losses. And yet, that doesn't completely surprise me. Wait a minute, that can't be true. They're 7-0 after double-digit losses?
Yeah. Let's see. Mike Vrabel, Titans era. I'll do some fact-checking, but
okay, because I got to believe in 2018 they lost to the Ravens by double digits, and then they lost the next game in London. to the Chargers. And how I can remember that, I don't know, but I can. But I'm not saying that your fact's wrong.
I'll double check.
Just take a look at that. But that is, if that stat is true, that is an incredible stat.
Yeah.
615-737-1025. Here's the question we're starting off with. If you're a Titan fan, do you think they're going to win Sunday? Not, don't give me your score prediction because I don't care. But do you really think this team can win? Because what we saw Sunday, this team's going to get beat by 50 points by the Seattle Seahawks if they do that. I mean, just keeping it real. 615-737-1025. And there's another element of this game that makes me think the Titans might have a shot to maybe show us a little bit more. We'll get to that coming up next. Let me tell you about my friends at Invigorate Health out in Mount Juliet. That's right. Are you feeling old? A lot of people I talk to, they say, man, excuse me, man, this is not like my 20s. Because in my 20s, I had all the energy and I could do whatever and it didn't matter and I felt great and I felt, and now I'm just so tired and I got my kids and I, let Invigorate Health take care of you. Invigorate Health has IV therapies. That's right. So they can just put that IV right in there, get you perfectly hydrated, increase your mental capacity, relieve your stress, revitalize skin and hair, bolster your immune system, and so much more. They also will take your blood. They'll see what your levels are. And they have hormone replacement therapies that can restore your vitality and are designed with you in mind. So instead of saying, okay, here, just load them up with this. Here, take these pills. Here. No, they check everything for you, and their trained physicians and nurses know exactly what they're doing. Then there's the M-Sculpt Neo. And the M-Sculpt Neo is the world's first and only technology that uses radio frequency and high-intensity electromagnetic fields to eliminate fat and build muscle non-invasively. You heard it right there. Non-invasively. So you can see, on average, 30% loss of fat and a 20% gain of muscle. Put it on your belly, you might see some abs. This is how Invigorate Health takes care of you. I'm telling you, they are the best. If you're feeling old, if you're feeling out of shape, if you're feeling like you can't get back on the wagon and get your health where you want it to be, Invigorate Health in Mount Juliet is where you need to go. InvigorateHealthTN.com. That's InvigorateHealthTN.com. Invigorate Health. My guys, tell them Jared Stillman sent you.
Well, I think the response has been good. I think that the message has been, you know, let's stop trying to be perfect. You know, we're never going to be perfect in anything that we do, but we just are looking for some precision, be precise, play fast, play aggressive, play sound, physical, but we have to lose this mentality of perfection that is never attainable.
Do you really think the Titans' problem is that they are so worried about being perfect?
No.
Like, that's the job interview thing where it's like, what's your biggest weakness? My weakness is that I work too hard. Yeah, I hear that, and I'm like, okay, that doesn't make a lot of sense. So we're doing this fact-checking on Caroline Stat. I think the Titans are going to win on Sunday against the Seahawks, even though I have no way. There's nothing about the game that I feel confident in selling to you that would say, okay, here's why I think the Titans are going to win. I just know in my heart that Mike Vrabel, since he's been the Titans coach, whenever you think they're going to do one thing, they turn around and they go do the other. Now, we still have questioned Caroline's stat. Where'd you get it again?
Yes, Mike Herndon from Broadway Sports. So in 2018, they lost 21-0 to Baltimore and then lost 20-19 to the Chargers. But that is the only double-digit back-to-back loss.
So then it'd be 7-1.
7-1.
Okay. So the stat is 7-1 when losing by double digits. And by the way, and I'm not here to gloat, I can't believe I just pulled that out of my rear end.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
I mean, that is. I was listening to the Midday Show today, and they were talking about, you know, have the Titans ever thrown out back-to-back stinkers since Mike Vrabel's been the coach? And I'm listening to Darren talk about the Cleveland game last year, which was just an absolutely unmitigated embarrassment. And he's talking, you know, they lost by 6, so that wasn't a stinker. I'm like, Baker fumbled the ball with a minute to go, and it was a blowout the whole game. Like, I mean, and I'm just, and I was literally getting mad. I was texting Chase because they were like, well, what about, and I'm like, what about 2018 when they lost to the Colts and the Texans back-to-back games? Like, I'm sitting there, like, getting mad. So the random things I can remember about the Titans are kind of embarrassing. Let's go to your phones. 615-737-1025. I think the Titans are going to win on Sunday just because that's how they do business. And they could not be as bad as they were. Let's go to Havo, who's going to kick us off. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. What's up, Havo?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Good.
Honestly, like Ian touched on, I think we'll play much better on Sunday, but I doubt we win, man. It's just not – I think Countdown is a coordinator. His play calling is, like, off of Madden. I think that this guy needs to get out of here. I don't know how we hired this guy. But
dude,
I think we play better.
It's one game.
How he play calls is, like, it's so predictable. It's so predictable.
He's done it one time. You say, like, you know, the way that he calls plays, he's called plays once. It's not like you've seen it 15 times and you know that the guy stinks. I mean, like, Michael Jordan had games where he didn't drop 20.
I mean, he didn't even – in the game, when you know something is not well – oh, you know, he was just – his play calling was horrible. He didn't even give us a chance to, like, even move up the field. Like, I think we play much better, but I think it's hard going on the road to Seattle and trying to get a win over there. Like you said, it's tough to even say anything about the game saying that we're going to win. Like, how we go off of Arizona and stuff. So,
thank you for your call, Havo. I have no idea how this team's going to win other than the fact that I think they're going to do it. Now, we got to talk about this Todd Downing stuff. I mean, and we'll have a much larger discussion about Todd Downing later, but the fans hate this guy. He's called one game.
But it's not even just the fans. I've seen a lot of columns, articles, tweets from Nashville sports media talking about how, you know, Todd Downing was the worst offender in that Titans or that Cardinals loss.
What do they know? What do they? I mean, like, no disrespect. Gentry Estes wrote that. And I know that, you know, you're talking about multiple people.
Multiple people. Yeah. I'm not calling out Gentry Estes here.
But, like, what do they know? Like, what does Gentry Estes know to sit there and say, hey, Downing is the biggest problem? Like, what does he, like, unless you're there, like, unless you know what the call was and what the design of the call was supposed to do, I don't know what, you think Todd Downing knew on Sunday when he put together the game plan? Hey, my $15 million left tackle is not going to be able to block. Probably not. Do you think he knew my $15 million receiver is not going to be able to separate from these bullcrap Arizona DBs? Probably not. But I don't love the offense by any means, and I think one of the biggest problems they have is that they don't have a tight end. But at the same time, like, just the angst for one game of Downing. If we get six games into this baby and it looks like it did Sunday, I'm on board with you. But one game and everybody just wants to dump on this dude. We had a whole season of Shane Bowen sucking. A whole season of just embarrassing defense. The Titans go out on Sunday, and I thought the defense was put in bad situations by the offense, but they go out Sunday and don't look very improved. And nobody here is complaining about him. I'm like, we got a whole season of data on this guy. And nobody's complaining. Downing, everybody's like, oh, he's the worst. It was one game. It was one game. Tannehill doesn't fumble the ball at the 1 yard line. Maybe the game is totally different. You know, when you're down by 15 points, you can't run Derrick Henry because it's not going to make a difference. And I almost feel like the ghost of Floyd has took over and is inside of me.
I know. I was about to say, like, we might be in a scary situation when you're the voice of reason.
Well, like, because you all know me, I have no problem dumping on a coordinator. I was mad at Terry Robiskie after the second week when they went to Detroit and won a game. I thought Terry Robiskie stunk. But at the same time, like, gosh, can we just get off of Downing for 5 minutes? Can we let him call another game? That's all I ask. I'm not even telling you he's good. I'm just saying, like, to have the caller's tone right there was just so defeated as far as Todd Downing was concerned. I'm like, is he really that bad? And that's a question mark, not a rhetorical question. Is Todd Downing really that bad?
He could be that bad, but I'm not going to allow myself to jump to that conclusion right now. Was Sunday's game embarrassing? Yes, 100%, but I think there's only a certain amount that you can do when your quarterback's on the ground and your 2,000-plus yard running back is getting stuffed up the middle every single play. So yes, are there adjustments that Todd Downing could have made that he didn't make? Yes, but I'm not going to put the entire blame of the game on Todd Downing because there's only so much that you can do.
Mariota's last game against Denver, they lost 16-0. They went in there, they couldn't do anything. And a lot of that was because Marcus was so bad. But they went to Denver, and they got beat so badly, and it was embarrassing. And I didn't hear one person say, you know, Arthur Smith's the problem. And Arthur hadn't really done a whole lot up until that point. So I don't get where, like, one game it all goes to crap and Downing is, oh, he's just the worst. I have no idea where that's coming from. 615-737-1025. Back into your reaction for the game on Sunday. I'm not sure I hear a lot of confidence. Now, you've got the text line, so we'll be able to take a look at that as well. I'm not sure I hear a whole lot of confidence on Sunday. I think they're going to win. I know it sounds crazy. I actually think that they're going to win. 615-737-1025. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. Let me tell you about my official movers, TriStar Moving. I've been telling you all about TriStar Moving for almost a year now. Like most people, I hated moving, but not anymore, thanks to my friends at TriStar Moving. They made the process so simple. That's why their motto is TriStar Movers with five-star service. From the initial phone call to the final signature, moving was a breeze. They offer home protection, covering floors, banisters, railings, door jams, even the doors themselves. And they are always upping the game when it comes to mover training and customer satisfaction. That's why this company is on the rise, my friends at TriStar Moving. Their owners, Garrett and Robert, true Nashvillians, and they want to help out the individual citizens of their city as their company continues to grow. And trust me, again, like I said, it's on the rise, all due to that high standard that they hold. If you're looking to move, give my friends at TriStar Moving a call, 615-640-1219, or visit their website, nationalmoving.org/radio, where they'll give you 5% off your entire move. That's TriStar Moving. 615-640-1219, nationalmoving.org/radio. Tell them Jared Stillman sent you. TriStar Moving, my official movers.
What surprised you the most on that game?
I just thought our sense of urgency and energy to start the game wasn't where it needed to be, and took us a little too long to kind of wake up, you know, and that certainly put us behind the eight ball, put our defense behind the eight ball, and that's something that we've got to get fixed and get fixed quickly.
That was Todd Downing yesterday. By the way, it is not a good sign for a coach to say, you know, I just don't think we were ready to play. Now, Downing is the king of BSing and is never going to tell you the truth. But I think it's kind of embarrassing for a coach to be like, so what happened to your offense? Well, I just don't think we were ready to play. First game of the season, and we're not ready to play. Now, again, I think Downing's BSing you. I don't think Downing, whatever the problem was, like, Downing's not going to be like, well, Joe, I just don't think Taylor Lewan could block, and we weren't ready for that. And it doesn't look like Julio's practiced in 2 months, so we weren't ready for that. And Tannehill should have held on to the football when Chandler Jones sacked him, and we weren't ready for that. He's not going to say that. But, gosh, I hate answers like that.
Well, that's like Taylor Lewan said, you know, I think I just got a little bit too excited pregame, and it kind of took everything out of me, and I was pretty gassed in the middle of the game.
Dude, you are a seven-year
vet.
Like,
what? I mean, it sounds like a kid at his little league game just had a sugar rush before the game and then passed out in the dugout. Like, I get it. I understand it. It's the first game of the year. You're coming back. You haven't played in a while. You're pumped up. But, like, dude, come on. Be better than that.
By the way, I have a new Taylor Lewan rule that I'm about to explain on the show later today.
Wonderful. So I'm excited.
We'll get to that. 615-737-1025 Fireball Hot Take Friday. We promised you phones, and that's what we'll do. Sean is up next on Todd Downing. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate the show.
Yep. Go ahead.
I heard y'all saying that, you know, we're dumping on Todd Downing after one game, and I get it. You know, I want to be more optimistic than that, but remember Todd Downing was the OC in Oakland, I think back in 2017, and he didn't even make it throughout the whole season.
So I think he did make it through the whole season, though they didn't make it much past that, and I appreciate your call, Sean. And I will say this about Todd Downing, and I'm about to pull up the stats for the 2017 Raiders. I will say this about Todd Downing, which is Fitz, the only person I know who really truly loves the Raiders, Jason Fitz, mm-hmm. Fitz hates Todd Downing.
Hates Todd Downing.
Hates him. So there is that. And he watches every Raider game, and he loves the Raiders. And we all know, because we used to listen to him talk about it all the time.
It's tattooed on his body.
Which is embarrassing. But Fitz hates Todd Downing. And I mean, like, because I told that to Mark Howard on the pregame show. And Mark Howard kind of shot that down and was like, well, they didn't have any talent. But I'm like, I don't think that's true. They had Marshawn Lynch. They had Michael Crabtree, Amari Cooper. They had two guys that could, you know, catch the football. 48 catches for Cooper, 58 for Crabtree. Yeah, I mean, Downing, you know, they kind of stunk. They were 17th in the league in total offense, 23rd in points, which is how we count things on this show. So it wasn't like it was a complete and total unmitigated disaster, but it's certainly not a good sign.
Not great.
Do we hold 2017 against Todd Downing right now?
No, because, I mean, how many successful coaches are there now, both at the college and the NFL level, who had bad stints other places?
Oh, there are so many coaches.
Probably every single coach that's coaching right now.
There are so many coaches in college football who get fired as a coordinator and then end up as a coordinator somewhere else, and then that team has success and then becomes like a can't-miss head coach.
Yes.
And you're like, whoa, how did that happen? Case in point, Luke Fickell got fired at Ohio State. Now, 1 year as an interim coach, and it was a mess. And so Luke Fickell runs that 1 year in between Tressel and the Tattoos and Urban Meyer. And Gene Smith says, like, yeah, you know, Luke, we love you, but you can't coach here. Right now, Luke Fickell could get any major job in America.
He's the hottest coach in college football right now.
Hottest coach in college football. And Ohio State, who knew him, because he was from Ohio State, and he spent a year as the interim coach, Ohio State said, you can't coach here. So that happens all the time. So I'm not going to hold 2017 against Downing either. And I think it's kind of like where I'm coming from and where the fans are coming from, I think are two totally different spots. I'm willing to give Downing the benefit of the doubt for 1 week. If this thing keeps going on, then you got a problem. Then it's Norm Chow. Then it's Terry Robiskie. Then it's get this guy out of here. If it's one game, I'm not ready to throw him out yet. And I don't love him or hate him or I don't have any feelings towards him. But I don't see how you can hate Downing and not hate Shane Bowen. I mean, I'm just being real, given the track record that we've got, you know, in front of us with Shane Bowen. What do we have in the text line?
Well, to your point, I think it's all at expectations. Because, I mean, I personally don't think the Titans defense was terrible. It wasn't great. It wasn't anything that should make you happy, but it wasn't terrible. But I don't think anyone expected the Titans defense to be the same expectations as the offense.
Sure.
But one texter texts in and says, I think some of the hate on the OC is not wanting to admit that the players aren't as good as we hoped they would be.
So I think there's probably something to that. I think the one thing that this city does, and I don't know if other cities do it because I've actually never worked like in the city. I worked in New Hampshire, which covered Boston teams, and Boston's just different. Like, if you're not Larry Bird or Tom Brady, they're going to have a bone to pick with you until you prove that you are Larry Bird or Tom Brady. And even then, they might have a bone to pick with you in Boston. But here, anytime that a big-name player, anytime a player that you're convinced has a big name comes in here, the fans just drop their pants in just total applause. And that's like some small market stuff. Like, that's not what big markets do. That's what the, you know, the small towns do, you know, the he's our guy and he's yes. And that's like a college town thing. But when you bring in a big name, this town just loses their mind about it. They felt that way about Matt Duchesne. They felt that way about PK Subban. They felt that way going all the way back to Carl Pickens. They felt that way about Eric Decker. They felt that way about Julio Jones. They felt that way about Jadeveon Clowney. We told you on this show, this is the one radio show that had a former NFL general manager on it. A guy who is in the Titans Hall of Fame. And he told you for months he had no interest in Clowney. Zero. No interest in Clowney. And every time it came up, and again, we try to do pandemic sports talk 5 months without a game. There's a lot of time to talk about Clowney, which we did, because it was like a whole spring and summer 2020 kind of thing. And every time he just dismissed it. And at the end, when there wasn't any training camp, and then there were some rumblings about the Titans getting involved and this, that, and Clowney, and he said, I'd offer a minimum salary, and that's it. Ha-ha. Like, and then when Robinson made the move, the largest criticism he ever offered about John Robinson publicly, he said, I understand what they did. I wouldn't do it. And that told me all I needed to know. And yet the fans were still like, yes, Clowney, yes, yes. And Joe Rexroad, no matter what he tells you on the morning show, Joe Rexroad said the same thing. And Corey Curtis, who's going to be on in 30 minutes, said the same thing.
Well, Joe would do it again.
And they said he'd do it again. And this town, just they get so caught up in like, we use Taylor Lewan as an example. Taylor Lewan is a Pro Bowl left tackle. He's been to the Pro Bowl, I think, two or three times. You know how many Pro Bowl left tackles there are in the NFL? There's a lot of Pro Bowl left tackles. Mm-hmm. He's not a year-in and year-out All-Pro. In fact, he's never been an All-Pro. He's not one of the best left tackles in the game. But you talk to the fans about Taylor Lewan, and they will just... Oh,
on a pedestal.
Great. Kevin Byard. And I like Kevin Byard, and I think he's a good leader. And Kevin Byard is not one of the best safeties in the NFL. He's not Justin Simmons in Denver. He's not what Ed Reed was for all those years in Baltimore. He's not one of the best safeties in the game. He's one of the best defenders on your team. Mm-hmm. But he's not one of the best safeties in the NFL. But the fans here just freaking love him. They just love him like, oh, yes, yes, yes. And I think this is kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, these guys may not be as good as you think they are. I still have a hard time with the Titans offense not having a right tackle or a tight end. And I just don't know if that's ever going to change. And people just don't care about it enough because they don't want to care about it enough. But they don't have a right tackle and they don't have a tight end. And eventually that's going to catch up with you. What else we got in the text?
One texter texts in and says, I agree with Jared. I said it walking out of the stadium on Sunday. We lose a game like that and wins game, no one thinks we will win. People are mad at Downing because of the inflated offseason expectations. Based on last year, all changes other than Downing were viewed as positives.
There's probably a lot of truth to that. And I also still think that the one thing about Vrabel is when you think it can't get worse for this team, and it really can't get worse than Sunday, somehow they offer a positive. Now, look, I picked them to win last week, and they embarrassed all of us. And if they lose this game, then they'll probably be 0-2 playing 0-2 Indianapolis. And honestly, I'll probably pick them at home to beat Indianapolis too. But I think there is some real juice in this one on Sunday about, you know, how are they going to look compared to how they looked on Sunday?
Yeah. I mean, and I hate using the words moral victory, but to Ian's point, you know, they're going to play much better in Seattle, I believe. I truly believe that, than they did against the Cardinals. And whether that brings a win or not, that's one thing. But I think at least just seeing progress, at least seeing proof that, okay, this hype could be worth it. Just to see, can they hang?
Talking about moral victories on September 17th for a team that fans thought was going to go to the Super Bowl.
I'm just saying.
That is rich. That is something. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025 here on the program. Coming up next, Derrick Henry. The one thing I'll say, I don't blame Derrick for what happened on Sunday. But Derrick talks about his performance on Sunday, and the one thing that I will say in my heart about Derrick Henry, we'll get to that, coming up next here on Stillman & Company. It is a Fireball Hot Take Friday. So if you want to get in, 615-737-1025 is the phone number to do so. ESPN 94.9 is the official English radio home of the National Soccer Club. Listen in tomorrow night as Nashville SC takes on Toronto. Pregame at 6:15 and the match begins at 6:30. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5, the game.
How do you like how the team has responded this week coming off a Sunday? A lot of guys yesterday talked about kind of having a fighter's mentality, kind of getting off the mat. Do you feel like you guys have done that? And what's kind of the vibe been?
Yeah, just wanting to play to our standard, play to our identity. And we know it starts out here each and every day, each and every rep, just locking in, working hard, focusing on what you got to do just so you can go out there and play the high level on Sunday.
That was Derrick Henry talking yesterday. I was actually stunned. Derrick Henry talked way more yesterday than I've ever heard Derrick Henry talk. It's almost like Derrick Henry, who doesn't want to do a lot of talking, feels like, okay, I got it. What we talked about on Monday, that he's got to be the alpha, so he's got to do the talking. He may not like it. It may not be his forte. But if you're going to be the leader, you got to do the talking. It's part of the job.
And I think he kind of knows that, too, that if I don't do it, who will? And, of course, there are plenty of leaders on this team, but I think that Derrick has that same kind of mentality of like, okay, when I see a need, I'll fill it.
All those great leaders didn't lead well enough on Sunday. So there is something about Derrick Henry that is bothering me that I want to get off my chest. And I don't hold Sunday against Derrick. But he went on Taylor Lewan's podcast, the Bussin' with the Boys podcast, this offseason, and talked about how thinking about that game, the Ravens game that ended the season, that hurt him so much that he was waking up in the middle of the night thinking about the game. The fact that he had 60-whatever yards against Baltimore, We know he didn't really have a lot of yards on Sunday against Arizona either. Now, the games were different, and the reasons why were different as well. But I asked Derek about that at training camp, and Derek said, you're only as good as your last game. And I don't think he actually believes that, but it's a nice cliche, and he did say it. And now we've got two bad games in a row by Derrick Henry standards. Now, the line plays a big role in this, but at the same time, Derrick Henry ran for 2,000 yards with an offensive line that had Taylor Lewan and Jack, or won a rushing title with Taylor Lewan and Jack Conklin as the bookend tackles, and then did it again with Dennis Kelly and Ty Sambrylo slash David Quessenberry at left tackle for most of the season. So does the line matter that much as far as an elite running back? Who blocked for Barry Sanders? I don't know. But I take the two bad games in a row from Derrick Henry, and I look at the Seahawks, who last year finished fifth in the NFL in rushing defense. And I look at how they performed against some of the best running backs. Dalvin Cook, 17 carries for 65 yards. Now, whoever Alexander Mattison is in that game had 20 for 112.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know who that is. I'm guessing he's Dalvin Cook's backup. But Dalvin, 17 for 65. They played Dallas with Ezekiel Elliott last year. Now, this was early in the season, but they played Dallas. Zeke, 14 for 34. So they are a team in Seattle that a couple years ago couldn't stop the run for anything, and now you put an elite running back in front of them, and they're pretty decent against it. Last week, they faced Jonathan Taylor, 17 for 56. How worried are we? Two bad games in a row from Derrick Henry by Derrick Henry standards statistically, and a Seahawk team that last year didn't let Zeke get going, last year didn't let Dalvin Cook get going, last week didn't let Jonathan Taylor get going. How worried should we be?
Well, I think that's one of my biggest concerns about this game is this Titans offensive line against the Seahawks defensive line, because it's a lot of young guys, but they are brick walls there on defensive line. And Jonathan Taylor, who I think has a very bright future in the league, he's not as good of a running back as Derrick Henry. He's not as proven of a running back as Derrick Henry. So if he's held to that many yards, I think that they're going to double, triple up on Derrick Henry. They know exactly that's what the Titans want to do. I mean, he's one of the best, if not the best, running backs in the game. So of course that's going to be their defensive scheme, is to limit Derrick Henry. But it comes to a certain point where how much can you really put the blame on Derrick Henry if he's covered up? And how much can you put the blame on Derrick Henry if this Titans offensive line isn't doing him any favors? I'm with you. I mean, your best players need to show up and make game-changing plays.
Sure.
But there's only so much that Derrick Henry can do if he's not throwing a bone every once in a while.
So I am worried about the line, and I do blame the line for week one and not Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, in this league, you're judged by what you do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you are judged. The Titans have had offensive line issues in the past. Derrick Henry still run for 100 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, the Titans had offensive line issues a couple of years ago, and, you know, Derrick pulls 238 out of his rear end on a Thursday night against Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like I don't feel comfortable in just leaving Derrick away from any of the blame. There are no sacred cows here. And if there ever was a sacred cow, Derrick would be the closest thing to a sacred cow. But two games in a row, I mean, look, what is this team ultimately defined by? Running the football with Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can't run the football with Derrick Henry on Sunday against the Seahawks, then it's three games in a row that they haven't been able to run the ball with Derrick Henry. This is a guy who, when he gets it, everybody in the ball yard already knows he's going to get it and still won a rushing title and ran for 2,000 yards doing it. I'd say there's a lot on Derrick Henry's plate. I'd say this is one of those games where, you know, you can look at it and say, you know, it's on Derrick to find a way to kind of carry this team from a running standpoint. Even if the line doesn't totally do their job, it's on Derrick because he's Derrick Henry and he wants to be the leader and he wants to be the alpha. And I think he should be the leader and I think he should be the alpha. But when Eddie George slowed up, we made a lot of excuses about, well, Lorenzo Neal, his fullback's not there anymore. But ultimately, Eddie just slowed up. And I hope that's not what's going on with Derrick Henry. 615-737-1025. Let's get back to your text messages again on the Seahawk game this weekend.
One texter texts in and says, I'm glad John Robinson is our GM. I do not trust him with the draft. I could name many bad picks such as last year, but why did he take Farley when Christian Darrisaw was on the board? A lot of this revisionist history from the NFL draft, I don't think is fair at this point. Because I hear you, like, you know, well, you took this guy at 22. These guys were available at 23, 24, 25. I get that. I think we're past that at this point.
So I don't think we're there yet. You say we're past it. I don't think we're there yet. And the reason why I don't think we're there yet is because we don't know if any of these players are going to be good. Like, we have no idea if the 2021 draft players are going to be any good. You have no idea. Now, that being said, the 2020 class,
you can rag on
I'm
that
getting
one.
Worried about.
You can rag on
I
that.
I mean, now that's bad. And the fact that they don't have any rookies that do anything for this team right now is a humongous concern. I mean, they don't have any rookies that can play right now. Molden, on a good team, Molden would not be out there. He's not ready. He's not ready. His technique, Marcus Spears dumped all over his technique on NFL Live the other day. He's not ready. And he's the only guy they have that is that goes out there and is does anything from this rookie class. Farley doesn't go out there and do anything. What's his name? Dylan Radins can't be active on game day. I have no idea what Monty Rice did Sunday. I'm guessing nothing. Des Fitzpatrick's already been cut. Rashad Weaver, not active on Sunday. Racy McMath played a couple of plays. Now, he didn't do anything, but he played a couple. I mean, it's like the draft class stuff to me, like, I'm concerned. And the other thing I'll say is this. Farley better get out there and play soon. Like, I know that you don't draft a guy for 1 year, and I know that Farley was hurt, and I know that they knew that going in, and I know that he's got to play.
But if he is hurt, he cannot play.
But at some, he was drafted to play. And he was not drafted to be hurt.
And he was drafted knowing that he was hurt. John Robinson drafted him knowing that he was hurt.
But with the assumption that he'd get out there and play at some point.
At some point. It's week two.
I have no interest in you if you can't play. I have no interest.
It's week two. I don't think it's fair to say that yet.
No, he was able to play last week and didn't play. Well, you know, Jared, you got to give him time because he's, you know, it's okay, fine. All right, yeah, you guys just keep waiting. Just keep sitting
by
the Christmas
tree. I think I would want to see Caleb Farley play when he can go out there and contribute. But what's the point in putting him out there if he doesn't know his routes, if he doesn't know this defensive scheme?
What is the point in having him out there? What's the point in drafting him if you don't know if the guy's going to be healthy, and then by the time that he's cleared to play, he's not good enough to do anything for you?
Well, that's a conversation that we had a long time ago.
But that's where they are right now.
Yes.
It's one thing to have that conversation in April when people will say, well, he'll be okay. It's another thing when he's not playing and then he gets hurt with something else. This apparently is a foot injury.
Shoulder?
Is it shoulder?
I think it's shoulder.
Okay. But this isn't the back. So now it's another injury. Oh, great. Injured guys, the thing I know about the NFL is this. Dumb guys stay dumb, fat guys stay fat, injured guys stay injured. That's usually how the league works. And again, we worked over here for years with what I would call an injurist. Not a racist, not a sexist, not an elitist, not an anything else-ist, but an injurist. If you were injured, Floyd didn't want you. Now the Titans take all these injured players. And now here's Caleb Farley, who's injured again with something else. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get back to your calls because I see them loading up next on a Fireball Hot Take Friday, plus your text. Plus, we are implementing a new rule on the radio show as far as Taylor Lewan is concerned. How do you feel about me? This is a dictatorship, I would like to just state for the record. How do you feel?
I learned that a long time ago.
How do you feel about me just putting in my own authoritarian rules?
As long as I get to do it in the future, whenever I feel like a rule is so fit, I'm in support of it. I'm all for it.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Hold on. Wait a minute.
Nope.
Authoritarian rule says nope. Join us in partnering with the Leukemia Lymphoma Society's Light the Night. Light the Night brings light to the darkness of cancer through hope, research, and support for patients and families through this inspirational nationwide movement. We raise awareness and funding for groundbreaking research and treatment options to eliminate cancer. Nashville's Light the Night will be virtual and take place on November 4th. Learn more at lightthenight.org/TN.